Your lady knew that. She said he got a ticket on the Molly. Mommy, do that. Duckin' with my round diamond lane. I thought you knew that. Town Ave Raider 106 is where we grew that. See me on the 10 with my squad. We so trill. Go uptown with them foolies, nigga, chopping by the meal. I do it for my bros on lock. Them hoes on stock. I used to wear Pirellis back when Nelly was on top. Nines, 442s, my pack of bang. Rewinding, my bitches red as a Honda. Throw back on them Yokohamas. I'ma slam at a scraper. You touch the paper, it's go. Me out your granite for show. These hoes stick in the snow. I get it going, my nigga. I blow the horn and she ready. Disrespectful nigga, please. I'm the one with the fatty. I'm going out with a bang. It's laying on the chain. I just show him with diamonds, nigga, cause laying is the game.
What is going on, everybody? Hopefully you guys are all doing well out there. Sit back and relax. This is going to be a solution session, like, hour. You know, I've maybe me and my brother and maybe other people out there have maybe spent the last week or month complaining, although I've thrown at maybe my complaints are often miscued. Sometimes I complain about something more as a warning or to you know, try to shed light on a situation that might need a little bit more light shed on it. But today, you know, instead of complaining about it, I'm going to tell you what I would do. If somebody from Tops would have to pay me a lot of money to want to come in there and work. I wouldn't have to work there for very long. I think I could work there for 60 to 90 days. And not that I would do an economic turnaround or anything like that, but I guarantee you I would at least put some kind of plan in place, some kind of leadership and some kind of structure to help deal with some of the problems that are going on over there. It's not really that hard. You don't even really need that many people. I know far more successful businesses that are run by one or two people than by however many they got over there. I don't care if they're interns or they're fresh-faced or what. There's a way to organize those people. They're talented. They're skilled. It's all about giving them the tools needed to do that. So I'm going to talk about what I would do at Tops to help the customer service, help the structure of what's going on there. I mean, this is a quote company that doesn't even have a CEO. So I'll talk about that and what I would do to circumvent that. And I don't care if I was the lowest paid guy or the highest paid guy. I'd do the exact same thing. So I talk about that. The other solution session I'll have probably after a break is Panini. And Panini, I think, can handle customer service. Can, you know, obviously there's issues, whether they're simple or complex. Every company from Apple to the worst companies out there, and I could think of tons of those, not just in the sports card business. There's tons of bad businesses out there. You know, there's a mixture of how serious and how complex the complaints are and how numerous they are. Panini seems to have at least some kind of a hold on that, at least a little bit. It's not that I don't hear any complaints about them, but it's not enough for me to lose sleep at night like I might over other companies where I get emails about guys that have spent thousands of dollars. And trust me, these guys are smart enough to spend their money on whatever they want. And you treat them like crap. I wonder where that money is going to go. It's going to go to. It's not like that guy's going to go broke. He's just going to find something else to put his money into because he's smart enough. He or she is smart enough to do that. So at least Panini recognizes that and they treat their customers with at least a little level of respect. But their weakness, in my opinion, is brand recognition. Is creating strong brands that differentiate themselves. They tend to do it at certain times of the year and in certain sets. Certainly every manufacturer has good sets and bad sets. But Panini seems to really tilt the scale. If you put them on a scale of the really good sets and the kind of just whatever sets, the whatever sets would really weigh down that scale and there'd be a lot more sets over there. So I think they could correct that. Whereas Tops, I think, is that's a strength of theirs. Tops Chrome, Bowman Chrome, regular Bowman, regular Tops, even Tops Sterling, even Tops Triple Threads, even some of these products that sometimes hit or miss, you know, at least there's some brand recognition there, especially with dealers and people that have been around this hobby for a while. So those are the two solution sessions we're going to have today. Let's move right on to tops. First thing I would do, I don't care if I was an intern, free intern, it could be free, I could be filling coffee, I could be $12 an hour or whatever customer service makes, I could be more middle management, I could be hired as management, CEO, I don't care. I would do the exact same thing, and I've done this since I was like 19 years old. I remember being 19, getting the cell phone number to the head of the Parks and Recreation Department that I worked for. I was a lowly employee at the Parks and Recreation Department. And I called up the head of the Parks and Recreation Department that made six figures and drove a Mercedes and called him up on the phone and told him he was an idiot. Told him, and this is in so many words, if we use the, I don't want to put the explicit language on this, but I basically told him he was an idiot. In so many words, I told him my manager was an idiot. He certainly was an idiot. And I told him exactly how things should be run. Well, the next day I get a raise, a $2 raise, and I get a promotion to where I get to go out to this house that's on a golf course and I get to run weddings and play golf. Basically was my job after I cussed out the manager. It's always a good thing to do. It's not a bad thing to do. Those guys typically have everybody sucking their you-know-what all day. So the one guy that calls him up and tells him how he should do his job, well, chances are a smart guy, not even that smart of a guy, tends to listen to that. And that's the first thing I'd do if I got hired at Tops. I did it when I was 19. Certainly I'd do it now. I'd probably do it in even more forceful language now. First thing I'd do is whoever's in quote charge at Tops, I think they have a CFO, Chief Financial Officer, or Chief COO, Chief Operating Officer, one of the two or both. I don't care which lame ass wants to come, but I wouldn't talk to them directly. And this is, I wouldn't just schedule a meeting with him because one, I'm the lowly employee and I'm talking to the CEO of Tops, COO of Tops or the CFO of Tops. He would basically look at me like I'm an idiot. And that's okay. But nothing would get done. What I need to also bring into the conversation, and this would take, I might not be able to pull this off in one day, my first day there, but I guarantee you, my first day there, I would find Michael Eisner's cell phone number or his email, preferably both, or whoever else was big at Dearborn Partners. I don't care, not an associate, not a partner. I want like a big wig, Michael Eisner or the second lowest guy or whoever. I want one of the two big guys at the firms that own this company. I want them in the meeting too, and I won't have the meeting until they do it. And it might we might be able to have a 30-minute meeting, a 10-minute meeting, 15-minute meeting. But certainly a guy like Michael Eisner, and certainly guys that are at the top of Madison Dearborn Partners are smart enough to, if somebody in your, it doesn't matter where you are in your company structure, if you want to schedule a meeting, even if it's for 15 minutes, 30 minutes, you better believe those guys will schedule that. It might be a week later, might be 2 weeks later after they're done with Pebble Beach and done with Torrey Pines and playing Pinehurst. But when they're done with all that, you better believe these guys will sit down with you for 15 minutes. So I'll waltz in, I'll schedule the meeting, figure out when it's going to be. Maybe I got to, whatever I got to do. If I got to fly to where these guys are at, I'll pay for that. I'll pay for the COO or whoever else wants to come too. We'll all come. We'll sit down. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, we'll all get on the same page. We'll say, hey guys, we all want to make money. We all want to get rich. Michael Eisner and these Dearborn Partners, they eventually want to sell this company. They want to make it look as good as possible. We all know this. Let's all get on the same page. Cool. Now we need to address the customer service issues because that's going to deteriorate our brand. We could do, you know, and that's eventually going to deteriorate our profits and our ability to sell this company. And Michael Eisner is going to be flipping through his BlackBerry or the Dearborn Partners is going to be thinking about, you know, his swing on the sixth hole. He hooked it a little bit. He should have aligned himself a little bit better, weakened his grip a little bit. They'll be thinking about that, but at least they're in the room. So the COO and the CFO don't feel like they're the big shot because they're not the big shot. Michael Eisner's sitting right there. He's not listening to a word I'm saying. Neither is the guy from Dearborn Partners. Like I said, they got last week's round on their mind. Or they got next week's purchase on their mind, next billion-dollar company they're going to buy on their mind. Or they got a client who's been calling them all week on their mind. They don't care about me. But at least the COO is going to be wide-eyed and listening. And he's going to think, oh, well, maybe if Michael Eisner did listen to a little bit of this, oh, he's going to hold me accountable. And I make a whole lot more money than this guy. This guy could get fired and go work at McDonald's and make the same amount of money. But if I get fired, might be kind of hard to make 60 grand or 70 grand or whatever they make, 100 grand. I don't care. It's harder to find that kind of job. He's going to feel more heat than I do. That's exactly what I would do. So now the CFO and the COO's got a little heat on them. They got a young upstart employee that might not be able to do anything, but at least he's got the attention of somebody. And all I had to do was, I wouldn't even have to email Michael Eisner directly. Like I said, these guys are smart. I could have emailed his secretary or one of his probably five secretaries, and they would have said, yeah, oh, you work for Tops. Oh, yeah, he owns a part of that company. Oh, yeah, you know, we can fit you in at some point. If I was just some Joe Blow off the street, probably not. But if I went to the same college as him, or if I knew his brother or whatever, yeah, he probably would schedule him. You'd be surprised. I mean, if it's like Tiger Woods, maybe not. But you better believe business owners are not, you know, we know what Tiger Woods does in his free time. So, anyways, now that you get my point, you go straight to the top whenever you go, when at any company you are at. This is not just a lesson about Tops. Any company you're at that, or if you're young listening to this, call the guy on the phone. Every company I've worked for, I've done that. I've told the guys that are idiots to their face. I've quit jobs because the boss was a moron. He didn't listen to me. And then 3 months ago, he offered me $60K in commissions on a job. That really a licensed agent should do, and then I can do in my sleep. And I was teaching his licensed agents how to do their job. So you wonder why he's trying to rehire me, and you wonder why I get pissed off. But anyways, enough with those bad memories. I would state my policies clearly on Tops. Well, that's the one thing I think that causes a lot of confusion. If on Tops website, clear as day, or like when you hit call customer service and you add right below it, wait times at least 45 minutes or more, just if that's what the wait time is, and that's what I've heard, that the wait time can be between 15 and 45 minutes if you get through, if you're lucky with Tops, well, put that right on your website. Why hide that fact? Just put it out there. You'd get less calls because people would be like, screw that. I don't want to wait for 45 minutes. They'll weigh the value of their complaint. If they're waiting for a Hank Aaron ball, Willie Mays and Ken Griffey Jr., I guarantee you they'd stay on the line for 45 minutes. But if they're waiting for Tony Batista autograph or whatever, they probably won't hold for 45 minutes. So just put it on your website. That's the first thing I'd do. Just tell the truth. Just tell the truth. 45 minutes, at least. Maybe more. Maybe we won't pick up. I'd put that all on my website. Or just not put the phone number out there, one of the two. But I'd probably put the phone number up and tell you, hey, you might not get through. Or it's going to be 45 minutes. Just tell the truth. I would state everything clear as day. If you get a redemption and we can't fill it within 6 weeks, or if the athlete doesn't sign, or we don't want to pay him what he's asking, or he loses the cards, or his girlfriend loses them, or whatever, I would state all that clear as day on my website and say, we're going to replace it with this. Or, better yet, I really think they should give you the choice. Instead of sending out 10,000 Doc Goodens and Gary Carters to everybody, how many complaints are you going to get back? Why can't we just, all the customer service now we got to deal with, we should have just given them a choice. 90% of it, and give them a time limit. Say, hey guys, you have 4 weeks to pick something from this list to replace the redemption. And if you don't pick within this 4 weeks, we're going to send you a Gary Carter or Doc Gooden. Period. End of sentence. So some guys that want the Gary Carter and Doc Gooden won't contact you. The guys that want something will look through your list and hopefully find something. And at least will be their choice. They'll be the decision maker. How can they complain? I know that Upper Deck talked about this. That they'll let the customer choose, and then he gets his box or gets his card, and then he complains again. And I bet that happens. I guarantee you that happens, since the companies themselves said it happens. But I wouldn't be as concerned about a customer. I would be able to deal with that customer on a one-on-one basis. That the percentage of customers that do that is going to be smaller than if you just blindly send out 10,000 redemptions to people that don't even know they're coming. And all of a sudden they're like, what the F, basically, when they get it. They're either happy or they're like, oh, what the F. Usually rarely in between there. So I would state all that clear as day and just tell people. FAQ, frequently asked questions on Tops, Tops redemptions, Tops customer service. Reduce the hours they can call in. And if you're having trouble answering the phone, just make it a real tight window. Give people only 2 or 3 hours to call in. Tell them the wait times are going to be real long, and put somebody by the phone, though, during those times. If they can't be there during eight hours, just make them work 2 hours and make them work the whole 2 hours. I would create tops.com/forum. Why? None of these companies have their own forum. Good God. And oh, how hard it is to moderate. Let me tell you how hard it would be to moderate. You could get people lining up out the door if you just promised them a $50 box, $100 box every, not even every month, every couple months. Or put them in some kind of break or giveaway or guarantee them a Christmas. Give them, you know, they have those Black Friday packs with Panini and stuff like that. Make a special moderator card for them, or give a moderator black box or whatever. I mean, you better believe there'd be people line out the door to do it. And when they went to college or got tired of doing it, the line would still be out the door for people that wanted to fill their place. You easily get some people within, and those are the people you want moderating your forum. People that know this hobby and already know some of the people that are going to be posting on there and already know Panini like the back of their hand, probably better than a lot of their people that work there. Tops.com/forum. Let your customers answer a lot of the questions. You better believe if you had a Rel 1 forum and somebody came on there and was like, hey, I have this redemption. I've been waiting for this long, blah, blah, blah. What the F? You'd have 8 people coming in there and saying, hey, I had that same problem. You know, I waited a little bit. You know, they would explain their situation and say, hey, I ended up getting this, or I'm still waiting, but this is why I'm waiting. If the company can't respond, it's better that one of your customers, even if it's slightly negative or not the best message, I think it's better than no message. And certainly with moderators, not that you got to heavily censor your forum, but you could censor it a little bit so you didn't, you know, the trollers and maybe even guys like me that were just blasting off, you get me off, ban me, IP ban me. But the guys that were, you know, had a little bit of my mindset but were more gentle and maybe explain the situation a little bit more from top side, it would ease a little bit of the concerns. It would save a call into the company, save an email that you can't obviously answer. Let your customers do the work for you. There are customers obviously buying this stuff. There are obviously a lot of customers that are passionate about it. Certainly if you ran a better business, there'd be even more people passionate about it. Tops.com/forum. Let your customers do a lot of the stuff for you. And oh gosh, you could, the intern, instead of being on Twitter all day, could actually answer it on forums so customers could see the back and forth, go a month back, 2 months back, 3 months back. If the guy that's on Twitter now is apparently doing a good job, get him on a forum, get him on a blog answering comments or something like that, so you get this on record and so people can read this. Collectors can read this and say, oh, okay, it's okay if it's 6 months. It doesn't mean it's not going to come. It doesn't mean the Tops is broke. It just means, hey, the athlete during the 6 months, oh, the athlete's been on the road and maybe he hasn't had time, or the athlete only likes to sign once a year And that once a year is coming up in a month or two, and we'll do everything our can to get your 2011 Topps Chrome or whatever autographed. If that message was, it's on Twitter, but you got to dig all the way back. Twitter's instantaneous. It's good. That's all it's good for. And it's good for making change, obviously. If you have an opinion that you want things changed, that's another great way to use Twitter. But customer service banter should be on record, public record, or at least one-on-one. When it's one-on-one with an email, you don't need to publicize that. But I could see why they might have canceled the Topps customer service, but I would have set up a forum, answer it on there, have your customers answer the questions for you. Be a lot easier. That's a solution session right there for you. Also, on top of that, you're building a community. It's not like all the negative on Topps Forum would be all negative. There'd be a lot of positive talk on there. And they don't have to get into, if they're worried about buying and selling and trading and getting into the liabilities of that, don't do all that. Don't allow any of that. And it would still be one of the most popular collector forums. Just allow discussion. It'd be one of the most popular collector forums. They've had a forum in the past and they kind of let it just die. They've had like eTops forums and stuff that I think people still, I don't know if they still go to them, but you know, they end up getting spammed up. But then you got to spend with that. Forum's not going to just turn, you can't just turn a light switch on a forum. You got to build it up over time. They don't have employees here willing to do that. It's just the next job for them and the next platform for them to move on to something else. So they know the company is going to get sold and they might get fired and they might get merged with another company and have a different role or whatever. So they're not that motivated. These are simple ideas though. This is stuff that I could set up. Literally, I could go there the day of and set up a forum. I mean, a forum takes like 10 minutes to set up. I mean, a nice one set, it might take a couple hours on a nice one. But what's that? Topps got, they're making apps that are actually pretty nice. So there's obviously somebody that knows, they contract with somebody that knows what they're doing. Send it over to them. They'll set you up a forum for fucking $5,000 or whatever. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. And you could pass, when I leave after my month or two there, you can pass that on to the next guy. Oh, this is how you run the forum. These are the moderators. I would set it all up. I would type a Word document, an internal PDF with instructions. Here are all the moderators. Here are all their emails. Here's our goal with this forum. Here's our mission statement, basically, with this forum. This is what this employee does with it. The guy that runs Twitter comes in here and answers customer service messages when he can or when he feels like he can chime in and he's not... He's not trying to escalate something or touching on a subject he doesn't know as much about. Or maybe when he finds those, he forwards really serious ones on to somebody that really can deal with it. And it'd all be right there in public instead of some guy's iPhone 5 Twitter stream. Not even an internal way to keep track of those things. Stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Last thing I would do is I would create a checklist, again, an internal website or something. I forget what they call. I worked at a company that had these kind of problem solver type internal websites. So it was like a bug fixer. In a technology company I worked with, you were often collaborating with other people on projects, and they would do something and maybe get stuck on something or find a problem and they wouldn't know how to fix it. So they would make a note. It was a quasi forum, but it worked a little bit better than that. If I did my research, I would know what those kind of websites, there's a term for those websites, and there's scripts that run in WordPress and Joomla that do the exact same thing. It's a really good way. It's not necessarily a public website, but internally for a company, they're very valuable because you can collaborate and work as a team with those websites, and a guy can get so far or decide to leave or quit, and you have full record of what his thoughts were and what his role was, so you could plug somebody in there to fill that role, or somebody else working on it could take over for him. And I would set one of those up internally for Topps and for a lot of different branches of the customer service. But I would create a list of things we need to do better and maybe some out. And what I would definitely have is a list of outstanding redemptions that we get a lot of complaints on. So say it's this certain player or this certain set that Topps just couldn't fulfill for whatever reason. Well, I'd create a whole list for all that, and I would say, okay, and I would kind of order it in priority. Every day, maybe it's 100 names long, maybe it's 1,000 names long, maybe it's a really, really big list. If it's a really big list, you don't present that to your employees. You don't overwhelm them like that. You know, it's like putting a fat stack of papers on an intern's desk or an employee's desk and say, go through these, which has happened to me. Man, I go through them. And then after I'm done, I go tell the boss, you know what? You could have done that a lot faster if you'd done this, or if this would have happened, or if this would have happened. And then when he doesn't do it, you quit. And then he offers you a job pretty much every year since you've quit. So it's all about creating systems that save time and money. And that's exactly what Dearborn wants. That's exactly what the CFO should want. That's exactly what the COO should want. That's exactly what their job should be. And create a list of all the biggest problems internally through customer complaints, through everything. Oh, we're getting tons of complaints on these types of redemptions. We're getting tons of complaints on this. Well, maybe we shouldn't make those sets anymore. Maybe we shouldn't get that player to sign anymore. Or let's figure out a way to deal with this. And then when we're done with it, we'll say, okay, this is how we dealt with that. This is how we solved that problem. And then we move on to the next one. And you only present your employees with maybe 5 a day, 3 a day, 1 a day, maybe only one. Maybe they're only capable of doing one thing in a day, going from A to Z on one project. They're not multitaskers. Cool. Even if my list is 1,000 names long, I'll give you one name a day and say, can you solve this problem? Can we figure out what's causing this issue, and let's move on from it. Let's stop ignoring it. That's basically what's happening internally at that company. I don't care if they're getting bled by private equity. I don't care if they have low morale internally. I don't care if they have low motivation internally. I don't care if the company's for sale, which former employees say it is. So that's where I base that opinion on. Former employees that have been there for years say it's on the block. So, man, I got to figure it's on the block. That really affects employee morale. But if I was fresh face, apparently a lot of these guys are fresh face and new. The first guy I'd call, Michael Eisner, or the guy, whoever handles, calls all the bigwigs that gives them money for Dearborn Partners, which is just a bunch of rich guys giving them money, basically. Well, I'd call those guys on the phone. Schedule a meeting. It's easy as that, really. People, I think some of you might listen out there and think I'm joking. Or think that's a joke. Or that I'm not serious. But I'm dead serious. I don't care if I was filling coffee at Tops, if I was taking out the trash, if I actually worked at the company and I had some opportunity to where I could move, not even an opportunity to move up, but I basically worked there. I wasn't like the maid service that came in and took out the trash. I was actually there to take out the trash, and if there was a more important job to give me, like handling customer service or something like that, they might pass that on to me. Oh yeah, you better believe I'd call the boss, the big boss, the two guys that actually own that company. You better believe I'd schedule a meeting with them, or one of them. It's all I need is one of them. It's as easy as that. And then you hold people accountable. You bring them into the room. You bring the guys that are, quote, your boss into the room. And see if they want to not be held accountable after that. Because trust me, they're risking a lot more than I am. And that's why I always did that in every job that I had, because I was always the lowest guy and I had nothing to lose. I could go work at In-N-Out Burger for freaking more money. There's guys that work at my In-N-Out Burger that are literally been there since I would go there in high school for lunch, and that was like 15 years ago. There's like two or three or four employees that still work there. they'd make a lot more money than you think. Otherwise, I don't think they'd be working there. So I have nothing to lose. That's why if you're low on the totem pole in your job, you have nothing to lose. Shake things up. That's how you get a promotion. That's how this new job came up. Should I give it to this person that never really says much, just kind of does their job, but, you know, is not really a leader, doesn't have any, you know, just kind of goes from A to B every day and goes home? Or should we give it to this guy that actually had some really good ideas the other day or last month or 2 months ago? Maybe should have came with his ideas in a little bit more respectable fashion than just barging into the boss's office and telling him he's a moron, or calling him on the cell phone and telling him he's an idiot, or telling a lady to her face the program that she charges schools $12,000 for is a complete joke. Complete joke. It's real simple. That's exactly what I do at Tops. Hold everyone accountable, create a website that was actually informative and said, hey, you're going to wait 4 hours on the phone. You're going to wait a long time for your redemptions. Here's why. Here's answers to other questions. Just put it out there, clear as day, FAQ, and then create a forum. Give a box of Bloomin' Platinum to a moderator, and he'll moderate the dang forum for the whole year. Real simple stuff. When we come back right after this short break, we will talk about a solution session for Panini. We'll have another, this one about 30 minutes. Well, I don't know if I'll go on that long about Panini, but I have some suggestions what I do there for Panini to strengthen the brand, strengthen the cards, make it not so it's just immaculate comes out and treasures and signatures and gold standard and preferred and past and presents and all this other stuff in between. It's like, do we need all that? Are you trying to be Samsung that has 20 million? Well, maybe you want to be like Samsung. They're probably making some good money, but Apple has an iPhone and an iPad and then an iPad mini. And then iPhone S and the cheaper iPhone coming up here in a month or two. So you get where I'm going. Mercedes has a C class, and then the E class is basically just 6 inches bigger, and then the S class is another 9 inches bigger. So you get where I'm going here. I'll come back with more of that and how we'll solve some problems over at Panini right after this. For my bros a lot, them hoes on stock. I used to whip Pirellis back when Nelly was on top. Now it's 442s, my pack of bang, rewinding. My bitches red as a Honda, throw back on them Yokohamas. I'm a slam at a scraper, you touch the paper, it's go. Me out your grinding for show, these hoes stink in the snow. I get it going, my nigga, I blow the horn and she ready. Disrespectful nigga, please, I'm the one with the fatty. I'm going out with a bang, it's laying on the chain. I just show him with diamonds, nigga, cause laying is the game. And we are back. Time to get our little solution session on with Panini. What I think they could definitely, among other things, but what I'm going to pick on today is kind of their brand strength. And I'm not talking about Panini just as a brand. I'm talking about like kind of the micro brands, because that is essentially what sports cards is. And it's essentially what a lot of, like, think about Nike shoes. They have like the Jordan brand, and they have like the Air Max brand, and they have all the other little brand, Dunk brand, and all the about KD and LeBron and all these brands that they try to massage and treasure a little bit. And sometimes when athletes like Tiger Woods do what they do, those brands get a little derailed. Although I saw the new, this is like a really random plug, and I'm not doing this for any other reason. I didn't try the shoes on, but I actually thought that the new Tiger Woods shoes, they're really expensive. I think they're like $180 golf shoes. Thought it was a decent shoe. It was one that I would want to try on. I'm like a big old school. I wear the old like leather made in the USA shoes that they don't make them like they used to. That's not applies to golf shoes too. So I got to get mine on eBay if I want more pairs than I already got. But I'm an old school guy, but in terms of the new sneakers, I'd rock the Tiger Woods, I think. I'd at least want to try them on and see how they felt. But anyways, enough about golf. back to Panini, who doesn't have a golf set, but hey, maybe they will have a little golfer in the fold. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Well, I guess I'll preface my whole statement right here. I guess there's rumors out there, and I've heard these rumors already. And I mean, anybody with any sense to them realized this months ago, when the owner and founder, not the founder, but well, the guy that's been running Upper Decks for essentially ever, and the guy funding it essentially passes away, unfortunately. Yeah, God bless the guy. Well, you know, the company's going to get the quote ownership or the majority ownership or however much he owned of that company. I'm sure it's a large, large percentage, gets turned over to somebody. And it's chances are it's somebody in his family who chances are not going to – is probably more interested in the money than running a company. I mean, being motivated to running. You see rare examples of that. If it's like a football team or if it's like something like that, then the kids, they're kind of interested, or the wife's kind of interested. But baseball card company, among other McWilliams investments and business, not necessarily the first thing on an inheritor's mind, although great asset to kind of just land, you know, be a part of, I guess. So, but anyways, I'm prefacing this by saying Panini, certainly if they can borrow some money, because I think just about anybody would need to borrow some money to buy, even Upper Deck, to buy something like Upper Deck was probably, again, if you own the card company and you have enough money in just your bank account right now to buy Upper Deck, and it won't affect your operating, it's not your operating bank account, it's not your bank account that you got to pay the NFL and MLB, God knows you wouldn't want to risk that. If it's just your bank account sitting in your personal Charles Schwab bank account, if they had that much money, they'd retire. So they're borrowing this money. And if they want to borrow money to buy, basically, I think the assets at Upper Deck are called LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, and among others that they have, but especially Michael Jordan and LeBron. If Panini can buy those guys into the fold, come out with threads and prestige and gold standard and do whatever the heck you want with basketball, because trust me, if you got Michael Jordan in there and LeBron James in there for the first time in a long time, nobody's going to care what the product is. That's all. It's not, they're not going to care for a little while. So maybe my solution, I preface my solution session that I'll get it to right here with that. If Panini can somehow manage to buy Upper Deck, or somebody's going to end up with Upper Deck. I don't see the McWilliam family retaining this asset. That's just not typically what they do, unless it's just, especially an asset that's been probably on the, certainly on the decline. We know that. We don't even have to look at their balance sheet. Sports cards been on a decline. Upper Deck compared to other manufacturers, they were right there. They were making bids on Tops when they were for sale. In 2007, they made a bid, I think, actually, or tried to make a bid to buy that company. So, and now we see where they're barely putting out a set every couple months. And when it comes out, it comes out, but how much money can they make on something with one set, two sets? You know, you're as big as, not even putting out as many sets as maybe even a Leaf or something like that. So it's acquirable, in other words. So, but I think Panini should still listen to this, because if you got Michael Jordan and LeBron James, that'd be pretty tight. And you could really create some brands, because that's when everybody's going to get excited. Imagine if there was like a good rookie class or a decent rookie class attached to LeBron being in there. Kobe, dual autographs, a triple autograph, LeBron, Kobe, Jordan. I mean, good God, you think people are paying a lot for Kyrie Irving patch cards and Damian Lillard's and stuff like that? Imagine what they would pay for a triple. I mean, there's exquisites and other things that exist out there, but they haven't been made in a while, especially with Kobe paired with LeBron and Kobe paired with some of these guys from Upper Deck. So, man, that'd be great. So here's how I think that, enough dreaming and hoping here. being a basketball fan, obviously. And I don't care who – this could be Topps or whoever would have – if this could be Upper Deck trying to buy Panini. I don't care who makes basketball cards. I just want to bring them all together. Let's have LeBron and Michael and all the greats, Magic Johnson and all the good players right now, Kevin Durant and everybody playing right now, that's James Harden and all these guys that are real good right now. Put a Carmelo. Just put them all – it'd be great if they were all together. But it's all pieced out and it's all segregated. That's why this hobby's struggling. But anyways, another solution. Just bring them all together, baby. Make it happen, NBA. Make it happen, somebody out there. Create better brands, though. And if you got it all together, that's when you create brands that last a lifetime, that people remember 89 Upper Deck, or remember, you know, whatever, 2002 Fleer or whatever. I don't think anybody's remember that set, but there's sets out there that we remember, 1999 SB Authentic, or, you know, those kind of sets for me, 1998 SB Authentic. I remember those kind of sets. I mean, strangely, they're Upper Deck, so there's a lot of value, in that company that's not on the balance sheet. And everybody's aware of that. But anyways, create better brands, SPX, SP Authentic. We can think of really good brands. But for Panini, they created one, and another one was kind of Score Select. But Panini Prism, and I think Leaf sued them, so maybe they didn't create it themselves, but it's a new set for them. That kind of went wild. Not wild, wild. I think the baseball boxes weren't that great, and football is still hanging around. It's not like you can't get a basketball box, but it's not like they're cheap. And it created a way where they were selling like gold prisms and green prisms and stuff for money, and they don't have an autograph or a jersey on them. So very good. That's a really good – that's like creating gaming cards, essentially. I mean, you got to pay the NBA just like you got to pay the gaming Yu-Gi-Oh, whoever owns that or whatever. But you get the idea. I think it's a really – the Panini Prism and Panini Select, to me, were two really strong brands this year for basketball. Also, I think Preferred – I've prefaced that by saying I've pulled like a Larry Bird out of a box of Preferred. So I have good memories from Preferred. But from the cards that I see, it's kind of a mishmash of like Crown Royale and some other brands. So that's kind of weird. But the quality of the autographs, I think it's almost all on card, if not all of it is on card. That's what people want. Select had some stickers in there. I thought that could have been a better set if it was more on card. And people say, hey, on card's more expensive and it takes longer. You might have more redemptions. Okay, I know that, guys. But here's my solution here. I hear a lot about, you know, it's tough in the beginning of the year to get these guys at the rookie premiere to sign, you know, for 3,000 sets or 4,000, you know, or sign 10,000 cards or sign for all these different sets for all these different cards and all these different designs. And chances are they have to sign a bunch of stickers. Well, here's what I recommend to solve that. Okay, that creates a logistic nightmare too, because if you can't get the guy to sign then, oh, now I got to send him a box of cards when he's on the road, or I got to catch him when he's at a Dallas Mavericks game, which it looks like Panini often tries to do for basketball players. Oh, I got to meet him in this hotel when all the players are at the All-Star game or something. That you got to send somebody out there. Somebody's got to fly out there. The card's got to be ready by then. And all the different designs have got to have been made by then. It's a nightmare. No wonder there's so many stickers and so many sets that suck. You're doing it all wrong. This is what I propose. And maybe this will get a little stale, or, you know, you could improve on this. But here's my basic model, how I would improve on all the, basically that problem where you have all these sets that suck basically, and they have sticker autographs and it's only two hits and it's not worth the $80 or $120 they're trying to charge. Well, create Prism Series 1 and Series 2, or Prism Update or Prism High Numbers or something like that. You could create the cards all at the same time. You could also do Select Series 1, Series 2, have one come out right at the beginning of the year, but get the guy, okay, that's where the rookie happens, that's where the rookie magic happens, but it's not like we can't get these guys to sign more, it's not like later in the year people aren't still paying money, for these guys or still don't want to pull these guys from the boxes, and we can make the cards right there. We don't have to wait for Andre Drummond to hit us up at the All-Star game or to hit us back with the box of cards we sent him after he's been on the road in the first year. Basically the biggest year. We expect these rookies half the time. Most of the time we're waiting on rookie signatures and stuff like that. We expect these guys in like the biggest year of their life to sign a bunch 10,000 autographs in midst of that too, when he's got all this other pressure and shoe companies and TV and mom and dad and family and hanger-ons all putting pressure on him too, and not let alone the coach and the owner of that team and the city and the fans. That's a lot to ask when you have these guys in front of you. I better believe. I mean, I understand stickers have to happen, but they'd happen less if you could design, okay, when you have the guy sit down at the beginning of the year that designs Prestige or whatever set it is, Prism or any Preferred or National Treasures, I don't care what it is. Not that you got to do two sets of National Treasures. I don't think that's a good idea. And that actually would make, that would elevate that set even more. When you have Series 1, Series 2, and maybe an update, a la baseball, a la Tops, that have been making basically Tops Series 1, Series 2, and Series 3 since 1950. And sure, they've been sold a few times, but man, it sure seems like the owners of those companies have done okay over the years. And they're not in bankruptcy court or anything like that. And they haven't acquired a bunch of brands themselves. They just made their own brands. Oh, wow. Wow. Real innovative idea since it's been going on for, 50, 60 years? They've been making Tops Series 1, 2 updates. Sure, they've added a lot else to the mix, but sports have gotten a lot more popular. And I don't understand why Panini doesn't have Prism or Prestige when it first comes out. Sure, they do it occasionally. They have like Leaf Rookies and Stars and Longevity for retail. That may be a way to scratch your Walmart. I don't know why you'd want to scratch Walmart's back. 2 quarters in a row, same store sales going down. And the stock market's at an all-time high. Or pretty much all-time high or nearing all-time high. That should tell you a lot about where Walmart's going to go. Not necessarily in a year, not necessarily 3 years or even 5 years, but look out 10 years from now. How many big box retail? They had general stores back 100 years ago, 200 years ago. Where's a brand like that that has lasted the test of time and is a big box retailer? There's not any of those left. Sears is broke. Best Buy is broke. All these other ones have already gone broke. We don't even remember which ones they were. Amazon's going to just squeeze Walmart's neck. So off my tangent on Walmart. But if you want to scratch their back, and Target might be a better partner. Target might attract a demographic that's not just trying to get the lowest price on stuff. I mean, do we need tons of people, though? Those people in the hobby? Not that you don't need to sell your product to Walmart, but the customers at Target, and I'm not making any... It's not that I don't go to Walmart occasionally. There's freaking two of them like down the street from in my city. That's another reason why that company will go. At least they're gotta downsize. That company can't keep growing and expanding. So people are worried about the Walmart expansion. Don't gotta worry. Just let them keep expanding and then they'll blow up even bigger. So, and that's what it looks like. And then they're getting into grocery, which is like the lowest margin business in like the freaking world. Good luck. Good luck, Walmart. Amazon's going to freaking crush you too. And there are, because they don't really care about running low margin. Their whole business is set up on low margin. Anyways, if you want to scratch all those backs, an Amazon exclusive, eBay exclusive, Box Breaker exclusive box, it'd be easier to do. Easier to do if you tightened up the number of sets. And I think Panini really needs to do that. We have too many forgettable sets. You know, there's Threads and Rookies and Stars. And you know, a lot of these sets, you can't even identify. Like, if you identify kind of a memorable thing about the set, it's often negative. It's not like, National Treasures. All these sick cards that sell for thousands of dollars on eBay, or oh, all these sick Prism cards that reminded me of Topps Chrome and Topps Finest back in the day when basketball cards were really hot, when Michael Jordan and all the cool players were all in the same set, and it wasn't all, well, I mean, Upper Deck did have a corner on it, but at least he had Michael Jordan in there. I mean, that'd be cool to have in an NBA set, I think. So, you know, and Select was a playoff Prism and were nice-looking cards, I thought. And there was that whole black box promotion where you got the green ones on the bottom of the black box. That kind of set them off just a little bit. I think just the design of the card, that was a nice set. And it had those patch autographs, which not all of them were on cards. And some of the autographs were, a lot of the autographs were stickers in that set, which really disappointed me. But get the guys to sign that set in the beginning of the year on card when it's cheap and it's easy and you got them right there. Get them to sign your best sets. Put all your efforts into those. Build your brand there. Then you can kind of poop out. I mean, it's not like Topps doesn't have a lot of losers themselves. They often, like, kind of backdoor them onto their online, or they kind of test Turkey Red or whatever it is online, or they do these Allen and Ginter sets online. There's another thing. Complete sets or factory sets from Panini. More stuff like that with, like, exclusive orange cards in them or variations in them or whatever it is to add some value. We don't see a whole lot of that. It's just, oh, let's create a new brand, Immaculate. And we have these other ones. I don't even remember their name. Innovation coming. I mean, innovate. Don't just come out with a whole nother set. Strengthen the ones you already. Now we got to wait all year for Prism to come out. And then when it's all busted open and it's done, it's done. It'd be like playing a video game, waiting all year for Grand Theft Auto 5 to come out. And then the day it comes out, you get to play it. And then the next day, your mom takes it away and it's gone. And that's kind of like how, like, Prism is. Yeah, you can keep enjoying the cards and stuff like that. But when people buy Grand Theft Auto, they want to play and play and play, beat the mission, and then go play as this character and beat the mission, and then go play online and get, like, the golden gun and run around in a diaper and stuff like that. Everybody, like, that's why video games, that's why a lot of young kids switch to video games. There's a lot more enjoyment. There's a lot more long-term value. You know, once I buy the card and I save up the money for it and I buy it, there's, you know, I show it off to a friend, or I can look at it every night. And I do that. I'm not making fun of anybody. I'll look at my cards too. I'll look at my cards every moment I can. That's always fun. It's like, oh, that dude signed that. That's cool. You know, that photo's cool. Or read the back or whatever. You know, that's less people are doing that, believe me, than playing video games. Not even popular, real popular, or soon to be real popular ones like Grand Theft Auto. So, you know, ways to grow the hobby or strengthen the brand. So I can look forward to this year. Okay, man, maybe a weak rookie year, but they're going to have Prism right at the, like maybe right around when it came out. I think like December, January of this or last year. And it's like, oh, cool, Prism's going to come out right then. But, oh, instead of this stupid set later in the year, like Past and Presents or whatever, that is just horrible. Unless you load that up, even if it's all stickers, you got to load that up to sell it for the price they wanted. I mean, you got to put like 6 or 8 signatures in a product like that to sell it for the price they wanted. No wonder it's like, it should be like a $30, $40 box. But anyways, you know, Prism Update, Prism Series 2, or Prism whatever. And my comparison to strengthen my argument and probably close the show out is, after I closed the last segment out, I made reference and I wrote a college paper about this. And this was years ago. This was before GM went broke. This was before there was all the troubles in the car industry. I said, look at Mercedes. Look at Lexus. Look at the truck line, which is profitable for, well, at the time, the truck line for GM and Ford was profitable because it was F-150, F-250, which is just like a bigger engine and a little bit bigger bed, an F-450, which is like two tires on the back and a diesel engine, and an F Super Duty or whatever, which is like disc brakes and some other stuff. And look at Mercedes. look at Lexus, LS400, LS, at least they did it a little bit more consistently, I think, back in the day. LS this, LS this. Honda has a tight number of brands. Certainly back then, they had, I think, even a tighter number. They had Civic and Accord and, like, the CRV. And that's it. That's all they made. And you can buy a Civic, a brand new Civic, and a year later, it's going to be... It's not going to be worth, unless you wreck the damn thing or drive it 24 hours a day, it's not going to be worth a whole lot less than what you paid for it. You'd be surprised what used Civics go for. I mean, it's amazing. Not like 20-year-old ones or ones that have been kitted up and the guy like is effed with it to death and it sounds like a Harley Davidson going, you know, 8 miles per hour down the street. But the brand new one, you go buy a brand new one, and a year later, it's worth quite a bit of money. And it's because they got brand equity. I don't know. They're not even really that nice a car, honestly. I've driven in one and drove one. I can name a lot of cars that actually probably have a starting base price at the same or lower that I'd much rather have and probably much better driving, better interior, better motor, better acceleration, better braking, better handling, everything. But they've built a brand there, and they focused on one car, two cars, three cars. Yeah, they might have four or five in other countries, but, you know, you get the idea. Mercedes, all in their commercial, they put all their cars in the same color. And they put their whole lineup there, starting with the C-Class going all the way up to, like, the ML or whatever, or the G-Wagon, whatever they want to put up. That's for a reason. These companies want to fit you into something. They want to put you into the C-Class because they know, hey, as you work your way up in life, you'll say, man, I'd love to have an E-Class. The C-Class is pretty nice, but the E-Class is nice. And then when you buy an E-Class, you're like, oh, man, I just got a raise. And, oh, I want to top my boss. I'm going to buy the S-Class. And you could do cards the exact same way. You can have lower end stuff, but the you know, just go ahead and repeat, especially the good brands. Don't just come out with them once, or come out with them once at the hobby level, and maybe even retail blasters. And again, I kind of went off in a tangent, but to finish my point, if you want to scratch Walmart's back or Target's back or Blowout's back or DA's back or whoever's back you want to scratch, come out with a select black box or select black or select exclusive or Prism exclusive or Prism 500, you know, to just be like Mercedes, select 430, you know, put some kind of acronym after it, make it seem kind of cool or whatever, NBA exclusive Prism. But just keep, that's obviously a good brand. Why are you blowing your wad on one set and selling it out and raking in profits on that one set and not capitalizing it on again until a year later? You should do it again. And again, it would save money. You could get the same designer while he's sitting there doing the however many, and that's got to be a tough job. Good Lord. Imagine sitting down there. Someone seriously has to physically... I'm sure they have automated systems that make it a lot faster for them. And if you're really, really skilled at vector graphics and all that stuff, it's a lot faster for you. But these guys do a lot of work. I mean, shorten the – don't make them come out with a new set with different logos and different color schemes and different borders and different ways you got to fit everything in there. You already did it once. Do it again and again and again. And again, you can print those cards out and get all the rookies to sign them. Get all the veterans to sign them. Probably get more on card. Probably have less redemptions. Probably have less customer service issues now. Oh, so now it looks like we're actually cutting costs by doing that, by getting these sets out earlier and kind of condensing them a little bit. You can still come out with however many, I don't know how many basketball sets I meant to look, but Panini came out with quite a few, but certainly more than 09, 010. It seemed to increase year over year. And it's just greed by the NBA and the every middleman in between making money. It's just greed. It's not respecting the collector. It's not respecting the product that they're making. They don't even respect it. that they just say at the end of the year, oh, we got all these Anthony Davis stuff, or we got all this other stuff. Even though all this product is basketball stuff, we had to run a promotion at the National to move some of it out. And that's only in Chicago. I mean, a lot of people were there, but there's still a lot of collectors that can't afford to go there, or don't have time to go there, don't even care about going there. They'll just buy the box online. That's easy for them. So they don't even care about the brand. When they've announced four other 2012-13 basketball season, and who won the NBA Finals? Of course, the Miami Heat did. But who'd they play? Of course, the San Antonio Spurs. But if you barely follow basketball, they've come out with like 8, 9, 10 different sets, it seems like, since the NBA Finals is over. And some of these have been the best sets. So it's really a tragedy. Really a tragedy. For the NBA market. So we're coming up on the hour mark, so I'm going to close it, or probably with the music and all the stuff I got to mix in. We're at or over the hour mark, so I'll cut it off there. You probably got preseason football and mock drafts and all this other exciting stuff that you got to do. Maybe I hopefully filled your time either between work or on a walk or a jog or while you're sorting cards or doing whatever you do. So hopefully I entertained you for this past hour, or hopefully you don't look back and say I wasted that hour, or maybe you tune, like most people do with podcasts, they fall asleep halfway through or they tune it out at the majority of times. But thanks for tuning in. I always appreciate, I mean, I listen to podcasts, I understand you're not hanging on every one of my words, and I don't hang on the president's every word, God knows that, or any president, not just this one, any president's word. But and certainly my boss's words. So I appreciate you guys listening. Certainly appreciate the feedback, negative, positive. I've gotten lots of. I'm trying to catch up on all the emails. If you sent me positive feedback or negative, I'm still trying to catch up with all of them. I appreciate it. Keep them coming. Send me your suggestions for the show. Send me ideas. Send me anything. Just send it to me. That's the way I learn. I want to learn. I want to hear from you guys. I want to hear your complaints. I want to hear this stuff. Understand there might not be a whole lot I can do, but at least I'm hearing it and I'm exposing myself to it so I can form my opinions and feel like I can chime in when it's important, especially if everybody's just out there ignoring this stuff. And I think that's the worst thing to do. If you want to ignore it, go ahead. But that's obviously, if you listen to this podcast and read my Twitter stream, ignoring things is not what I do. And I explained a little bit of my history on today's show, bits and pieces. I'm not going to go into my whole life story, but I wasn't lying about any of that. I've told so many bosses to their face they're idiots, and a lot of them follow me on Twitter or email me. Or recommend, they know I'm sure as hell not going to work for him. But when they have a client they're trying to please, who's one of the person they forward them to? Oh, talk to this guy. If you stand up for yourself, if you speak up, and especially if you do stuff like I do today, you don't have to do this all the time. Maybe I should do it more. Offer some solution, offer some suggestions. You know, I'm probably wrong. You could debate me till I'm blue in the face that I'm wrong in this, but at least I'm throwing out some ideas. At least I'm not just ignoring it. Not that anything's going to happen because of this, but, you know, stranger things have happened in this hobby. Seem to recall going to Twitter and typing in Raz and seeing all kinds of stuff coming up that were raffles. And now that's done on places that where they should be. Those are done where they should be now and where they should stay. And so I'm happy about that, among other things. And I'm happy I called out Tops months and months ago, and now people are complaining, oh, everybody complains about Tops, or it's the thing to do now, or whatever. Oh, well, God, it's about time. About time you realize that. It's been months I've been saying, don't buy products from this company. Don't risk your money on getting any. Buy a Mickey Mantle. Buy whatever. You understand the risk there. But don't buy a box, unopened box, and think you might throw the box away and might throw the most valuable card in the whole set away. You'd have to go dumpster dive for it. You wonder why I haven't talked about that on today's show. I would have went on for an hour just on that. So I saved it. I think you guys don't need me to go into the tops. Allen and Ginter rip card on the top of the boxes. And how that company basically wanted their customers to dumpster dive or feel bad, essentially, for buying their product. And doing what any normal person would do and throw the wrapper, essentially, away. Throw the box away when you were done with it. Oh, wow. And they probably snickered. It's like a frat house. And the new guys in town. That's how they run that company. And it's sick. I'm not saying frat houses are sick, but you don't run a company like a frat house. God knows. I know frat houses that have gone bankrupt and lived on the same floor as me. It's like, come on, you're a loser. It's a joke. It's a joke they needed to create buzz around their product by throwing it away. They needed you to throw it away to like bump the price on it or create excitement about it. They needed you to feel bad about it. God, people wonder why I hate that company and don't recommend you even touching anything of theirs. They're willing to insult you like that. Insult the buyers of Allen and Ginter like that. It's just sickening. Just sick. We'll end it on that note since I don't need to go off anymore. Thanks for tuning in. We are out of here.